Florida carving out a slightly different path from the president on solutions to gun violence and school shootings. That conversation is just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great weekend. We are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, the president says he wants to arm more teachers as a response to school shootings. But many school boards in Florida say no to that. We'll speak with Duval School Board Chair Paula Wright in just a moment. You can get on the line now with your thoughts and comments at 549-2937. Then later, New York Times bestselling author Jan Caron is coming to town. Find out about her appearance at St. John's Cathedral, plus Culpepper on March Madness, all of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the White House today is promoting firearms training for some school teachers and tighter background checks as a response to last month's gun massacre at a South Florida high school. Over the weekend, the Trump administration rolled out several policy proposals focusing mainly on mental health and school hardening. The president is also establishing a federal commission on school safety to be chaired by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Earlier this morning, DeVos said everything is on the table.
And the commission that is being formed, of which I will lead, is going to be looking at this issue along with a number of other issues. And the point being that we have to get much broader than just talking about guns and a gun issue where camps go into their corners. We have many things, there are many things that have driven this issue in the first place. And we have to go back to the beginning and talk about how these violent acts are even occurring.
However, Trump seems to have backed off his earlier support for raising the age for firearms purchases from 18 to 21. Florida, of course, passed just such a law last week at the close of the legislative session, upping the firearm purchase age in this state to 21. The NRA has already filed a lawsuit in response to that. Paula Wright chairs the Duval County School Board here in Jacksonville. The Duval Board voted 6-1 last week against the idea of arming teachers in the classroom. She joins us now in studio with her thoughts about everything related to school safety. Ms. Wright, thanks for being on the show once again this morning.
Thank you for inviting me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the president's new commission on school safety, Florida's new law raising the age of firearms purchases to 21, and everything having to do with this? What are your questions for the school board chair, Paula Wright? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And as always, we welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Paula Wright, this morning, Betsy DeVos said everything is on the table when it comes to school safety, saying that we need to look at the root causes of gun violence. However, one thing that seems to be off the table for the White House now is support for raising the age for purchasing firearms. Florida, of course, passed that law. Right. Just last week, Governor Scott signed it. The NRA has already sued. The president a few weeks ago made noise about wanting to support that, but he is no longer seemingly in favor of that. As we begin the week with more discussion about this, what are your thoughts about the president's policy proposals here?
I'm certainly in opposition in terms of even his federal commission on school safety. There doesn't have to be a study. I think that our school boards and our superintendents across this country can provide them all the information they need if they were to ask. And I think if we stop placing so much emphasis on I've got to do something, as opposed to looking at what's being done, tweak that, and provide the resources to the schools so that they can keep our students safe.
Okay. What resources does Duval County need that you feel are not currently being provided or funded?
Resource officers.
More resource officers
so that they can develop a relationship with our students so that they can then help to prevent measures. We've had a number of students who brought guns to school, but every time we learned of a student having a gun in school, it was shared by another student. We have to build relationships within the buildings. And the only way you can do that is to make certain that you have people who are trained, one, to prevent prevent any type of activity dealing with guns, and two, the making certain that there's a cultural around understanding that there are safe people that students can go to. So we've been fortunate in Duval County that we've learned about every gun that a student has brought to another person in that building.
And we're able to stop anything before it happens.
Exactly. And then, you know, we go through the process of expulsion hearings, et cetera. But it's the relationships that we've been able to build. Another resource that we could use is more money for infrastructure, for hardening things like buzzers, the wiring that it would take to provide the buzzers, more paras to help in terms of providing more people within the building.
It's 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. For Duval County School Board Chair Paula Wright, what are your thoughts, Chairwoman Wright, on the measure passed in Florida last week, signed by the governor? The NRA has already filed a lawsuit to in response to this big new legislative package coming out of Tallahassee, a number of different measures to keep students safer in school. You appeared on our statewide program, the Florida Roundup, just the other day and said you liked some of the proposals but did not agree with one piece of that bill, which gives school boards the option to arm teachers in the classroom. And that's something President Trump is also now pushing and talking about. So well, where your board voted 6-1 against that.
Right. Our board voted 6-1 against arming teachers because we understand that that's not what teachers are hired for. When you talk about having a gun on your hip and with the intent to using it, it's not just a gun on your hip. It's not just a profession. It's a mindset. So law enforcement is a profession just as teaching is a profession. And we want our students to be able to feel comfortable with all of our teachers and not trying to figure out which teacher may have a gun. And also the law is very unclear in terms of where the gun will be placed on the person, in the classroom, in a lockbox. There's just so many different gaps that the legislature has not filled for clarity.
How then will Duval and other counties respond to the new law in Florida? Will each school board make its own way in this matter?
That's what the legislature has basically left us to do. And there is $67 million sitting there. And when the legislature passed that, they understood that many of the school boards or districts would not take this measure up. So why won't they? We're hoping that the governor still has the opportunity to do a line item veto so that we can pull that money from sitting there for $67 million for arming teachers, which we're not, most of us will not do, and put that back in the classroom. Ms. Ross, the legislature has only provided an additional 47 cents per student-based allocation. And it is only through the base allocation dollars that we could have flexible spending. So I think anybody can recognize if we only received an additional 47 cents, we are not even keeping up with the cost of living. So how do we now focus on providing the teachers, the supplemental materials, the curriculum, and all the things that we need to provide for our students academically, socially, and in addition to mental health, when we only receive 47 cents per student for base allocation increase.
Mm-hmm. And you've long been vocal about that you feel the legislature underfunds the state schools. And so at the close of this legislative session, then, how would you rate the legislative response to this crisis?
I would rate them a D because
That's not a good grade for a former teacher.
And it's not a good grade for a school. And I think they need to understand that you know, many of the legislators are so fixed on grading schools. Grade yourselves. If you're not providing the schools within your state adequate funding, then how can you grade yourself great or good or average? Because that's not any of those, in my opinion.
Let me ask you a related question. As talk continues around town about a plan to possibly privatize JEA, the city-owned utility. One argument in favor of that has been that a privately owned utility, an investor-owned utility in Jacksonville would put in more toward the local tax base, and that would theoretically help the Duval County Public Schools financially. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that if the city is willing to help the school district financially, they don't have to wait to the sale of JEA. Right now, the charter says that the city may provide us funding through the property taxes, or they haven't. We've had a number of meetings with our city council to ask how can we, as a district, receive some of the funding. So we don't have to wait. But the other thing about
you think they should raise property taxes to better fund the schools?
That's one consideration. But we're talking JEA. The taxes that will come just from JEA doesn't have to wait until the sale. Give it to us now. The only thing the city has to do is to share it. But if there is a sale, there's no guarantee that JEA won't receive a handsome economic incentive package, which would include perhaps not paying taxes. So that is so unclear at this point.
It's 549-2937. What do you think of the White House's proposal when it comes to school safety? Tighter background checks, money to train and arm teachers are two of the proposals. As we continue discussing this with Duval County School Board Chair Paula Wright, give us a call. And lots of tweets are coming into the show. Here's one. Raising the age to 21 for gun purchases is a good start, but we do not need to arm teachers. Instead, focus on reaching the students who are marginalized. That's what you're saying. How many more school resource officers do you think this district needs, Paula Wright? And how many are in each school right now?
Right now, for each high, middle and high school, there is a resource officer dedicated to those.
One. And how many would you like to see?
Well, we also have 101 elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see. I was excited about the governor's proposal because it would provide for every 1,000 students a district has one SR, school resource officer. So we were excited about that because that gave that another layer of adult supervision to ensure safety.
Another proposal that the White House is pushing is having retired military or police officers become teachers. So as to, you know, theoretically, I guess, better defend the students in the event of a dangerous situation.
We currently hire retired military for those who want to come into teaching. So that's not a new concept. I think that if that's a push, I think all of us would benefit that from that across the nation in terms of having more military if it's not for retired military, it's not about gun or being able to use a gun, because every person who is in the military are not necessarily trained on how to use guns. But it's the structure, it's the discipline that comes with the military personnel or retired personnel. So we've, in our district, often seek to include as many retired military persons as possible.
Dan tweets the show, "This is futile and stupid. The last thing we want is more guns in these situations. Why take a situation where people are running and screaming and presume a teacher or a coach can discern who the shooter is?" That's been the argument against this.
Right.
That's not an argument that seems to have persuaded the legislature, though.
Right.
They've opted in favor of allowing districts to do this if they decide mm-hmm. it's the right plan for their district.
Right. And in conjunction with the sheriff. And I just want to say at this point that my hat goes off to Sheriff Williams, Mike Williams, who has emphatically said no, because he understands the profession that he's in and the profession that
he's
we're in.
He's not in favor of arming.
He's not in favor.
Teachers. Okay. Right. And so you don't see this. You see this as a non-starter in Duval County.
It is a non-starter for us. And the other part that I think needs to come to light is that the liability, according to Representative Oliva, the liability, if there is a shooting in a school, is totally on the school. So mm-hmm. it could, you know, basically bankrupt a district if, you know, if it's catastrophic enough.
Big urban districts like Duval County, Miami-Dade County, Orlando, Tampa, the big metros in Florida are not going to go for this. Small rural counties might, though.
Exactly.
So you're going to see different responses around the state.
Exactly. And I think that initially the House Bill 7026 centered around school districts making that decision. And then I think that they recognized that if they also gave co-equal authority or power to the sheriffs, that would entice more smaller rural districts to do so. And I'm not in favor of arming teachers regardless of the school district, but of course that's a choice. But when you allow that choice to some can do it and some can't, and I appreciate the choice, you're going to have a mixed bag of information, and so the data is going to be skewed.
If you're just tuning in, lots of calls for Duval County School Board Chair Paula Wright. The state legislature finished their session Sunday with an $88.7 billion state budget, $186 million in tax cuts in this spending plan. It did apportion $400 million for school security measures. However, most educators are flunking Tallahassee, saying that once again, their operations budget for schools has been shortchanged. All of this, as the Trump White House this morning comes out with a new approach to school safety, looking at school hardening proposals, arming teachers, more money for mental health and background checks, but pulling away from his previous approach, the president's previous support for raising the age for firearms purchases. Florida, of course, now has a new law in place that does just that. What do you think about all this? 549-2937 to join the show. Let's go to Diane. She's visiting from Buffalo, New York, is it? Hey, Diane.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Sure. As a former educator for 30 years, I just would like to say that this whole plan of arming teachers is really just a way of copping out for the White House, because it is encouraging more guns. And obviously, the person that has suggested this is not a teacher and has no idea what teachers do. We nurture. We are there to help students and encourage relationships. And as the former person that was on, I agree 100%. The one way to find out about what's going on in the school is to develop relationships with students and have that talk time and to be there for them and with them. It is not arming them. Teachers should be asked if this is what they want to do, and it sounds as though some of the school districts down here are doing that. But again, nothing is 100%. Look at the fellow that just shot those three people in California. He was a former military man. He went back into the veterans hospital there and shot those three people. So nothing is foolproof, but trust me, I worked with emotionally disturbed kids. They would have found a way to pin us up against the wall and rob that gun. There are a million different things that could happen with teachers being armed, and not a good outcome.
All right, Diane, thanks for your thoughts this morning. What are other teachers saying to the school board about this right now? I'm sure you're hearing from them.
I've heard from a number of teachers, and I have not met or heard from one that said that they're in favor.
No one's in favor?
I have not.
You
this
have
board
not.
Member has
yeah,
not.
Yeah, but have others? I mean,
I have not heard any board member said that they've had a constituent call or write to say that they were in favor of it. And they're not in favor of it for a number of reasons. And the other part is that we have to understand, for children of color, it could also pose a greater risk. In terms of, we talk about the mental health piece. Oftentimes we're thinking of mental health for students, but obviously we've got to think of mental health for adults in those buildings too. So if you have someone who has a particular dislike for a particular segment of society and you give them a gun, that can cause a problem.
You spoke on our air just the other day saying that you're hearing from African-American parents in particular, that
yes.
They're worried about that.
They're very worried about, will a shooting occur between a teacher or a staff person who is armed and a student of color, and there's no clear reason why. So we have to, you know, take a look at every particular aspect of it and decide why.
Let's
Why
go
would
to
we have guns?
More calls for Paula right now at 549-2937. Sean is on the north side. Hey, Sean. Good morning.
Hey, I just want to make a correction. Your guest there had made a statement that all military is not trained with weapons. Well, you're a soldier first. Everybody's trained with weapons. Before you're a doctor or anything else, you go through basic training and get that training.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you. He's absolutely right, but thanks for helping me to self-correct here, because what I meant to say is that we're hearing that many of the military people are experts. Everybody, and that's what I should have said, sir. You're right, Sean. Everyone who's retired from the military may not be an expert in shooting.
Okay. And so you've already voted 6-1 against the idea of arming Duval County teachers. With the new law now in place in Florida, what changes might that bring about for Duval County?
Well, one of the things that we've got to do is look at how much money we're going to get from the Safe Schools budget and see, based upon the money from the budget, exactly what we can do. The budget was just released on the 8th, and they're they have given me some preliminary information that, but the board has to sit down and have a discussion on how now in our budgetary process, as we prepare for the upcoming school year, how do we use those dollars?
Curtis is on the north side. Hey, Curtis, good morning. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. My comment is I'm with everyone that is totally against this, but my biggest concern is why aren't we talking about a school depot in every segment of the city where the teachers can go and get supplies? I've met several teachers in Yulee, Mandarin, every area that really love their job. They spend their own money every year to have supplies they need to teach their kids. That's unheard of. There's no reason why, if they got money to give guns, they got money to supply every need that a teacher, every school, regardless what area, zone, economic development, tax bracket, those teachers should have everything they need. They don't need a gun.
Okay, Curtis. What about that argument?
Thank you, Curtis. That's a very good argument. We do have a teacher depot here where teachers can go several times a year and get free supplies, but the legislature provides to each teacher $250 for the entire year for supplies. I'm with Curtis. Why wouldn't we increase that to $1,000 a year, even if you give it out $250 per 9 weeks so that they can continue to make certain they have supplies? Why couldn't we look at providing more dollars for mental health resources so that we can help not just the student? And part of the problem is often when we talk about mental health, we're only talking about helping the students. You can't treat just the student. We have to find a way to find dollars to treat the entire family. That's how we solve problems.
Clyde emails the show, bringing more guns to school to address a problem with school shootings seems as dumb an idea as addressing the plague by bringing in more rats and fleas. This country is overloaded with guns, and the culture is drenched with the idea of guns. That is the legacy of the NRA. Now, the NRA has filed suit.
Yes.
In response to Governor Scott signing into law a new statute in Florida raising the age for firearms purchases from 18 to 21, the NRA saying that violates the civil rights of 18 to 21-year-olds. Your response?
I am behind the Governor Scott, the legislature point in increasing the age limit. Now, whether or not that's going to hold in the courts, we'll have to wait to see. But what I want to understand is, I think I have a solution. I have a solution. And that solution is give them all the guns they want. Stop making the bullets. Stop selling bullets. You can have all the guns you want. So if you're so fixed
sort of
on
like
guns,
paraphernalia stores that used to sell everything but the marijuana, is that what you're saying?
Stop making it. can we stop making the bullets and we don't have to worry about it?
Let's take just a couple of more calls for Duval County School Board Chair Paula Wright, as the White House this morning is out with new recommendations on school safety and even a new federal commission. What are your thoughts? Mark is in Maxville. Hi, Mark.
Boy, that was fast. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've listened to all of this debate, and it seems like it's the typical bait and switch that seems to be coming out of Washington these days, where they're given some small things that I'm not arguing about whether it's right or wrong to arm teachers, but really the question is arming assault-style weapons. So if it comes down to a huge battle over taking away AR-15s, whatever, or arming teachers with handguns, it seems like it's moving the direction and the attention and focus to something else that's really ineffective.
Okay, thanks for that call. Lots of calls this morning. And so as we go forward now, Florida has a new law in place, and just a couple months left for the school year. But when kids go back this fall, will things seem about the same, or will they notice any changes?
I think that we could help our students notice some more positive changes. You know, we've really been focusing on what the school boards are going to do, what the school districts are going to do. And it's really in the hands of parents and in particular teachers. We do not have a large percentage of teachers in Florida that vote. And we need everyone to...
How do you know that?
There was a study, and it came out that about 20%, only 20% of the teachers vote. Now, we're going to look at doing a particular study to see, you know, what's happening with that and how we can verify that data, because it's important that teachers begin to rally and citizens rally. This is a legislature issue that have been placed on school boards. We have it backwards. We need people to be calling the governor's office right now. I'm headed to Tallahassee this afternoon at 2:00 to meet with the governor's education policy staff, because I want to make certain that we really look at line item vetoing this $67 million that's set aside for the arming of teachers and staff, and look at how we can put that back in the budget for teachers, and also look at some of the other measures that we should have looked been more clear about in the House Bill 7026 in terms of the law giving co-authority to the Sheriff's Department and the school board, you know, to see if they can help us clean that language up so it can be clear.
Always good to have you on the show. Keep us posted on how that trip goes over to the Capitol, will you?
Yes.
All right. She's Duval County School Board Chair Paula Wright joining us this morning. And much more still ahead later, Culpepper stops by with a look at March Madness and how Florida schools are faring. And after the break, best-selling author Jan Caron. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Injuries can happen when you least expect it. For over 40 years, our attorneys have dug out the facts to help juries decide what happened and who's at fault. More at waynehogan.law.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
I am an Arab American Palestinian Christian Lutheran pastor in Southwest Brooklyn running for office.
On the next Radio Lab, the story of an unlikely candidate from one of the most diverse and divided districts in America.
This is our country.
I have never in my life faced anything like this.
I don't understand what this means for the Arab American community.
It is very personal.
Meet Father K on the next Radio Lab.
Sunday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Well, a special treat this week. It's your chance to come out and see New York Times bestselling author Jan Caron in downtown Jacksonville. Now, Caron is the author of the beloved Mitford novels, a fictional series about an Episcopal priest in the small mountain town of Mitford. Caron is speaking at the Episcopal St. John's Cathedral this week as part of a speaker series there. She's on the line now. Jan Caron, a pleasure to have you on the show. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Melissa. So great to be here.
So good to have you. And with us in studio, we're also pleased to have joined this Dean Kate Moorhead of St. John's Cathedral. Yeah. Good to see you, too.
Thank you. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning, Jan.
All right, Jan. Now, you are absolutely beloved. New York Times bestselling author. Your Mitford series is just a huge seller. It's my understanding the last time you came to town, you filled the Prime Osborne Convention Center with your fans. So I think it's going to be a packed house at St. John's Cathedral. Your books are about an Episcopal priest, so it's exciting to have you come to the beautiful Episcopal sanctuary right in the heart of the city. You're coming in for a speaker series. What are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about the long valley of Lent that leads to the mountaintop of Easter, and how we are to treasure that trek through the valley, because there's no way to have the mountaintop without it. There's no way to have Easter without Lent. And I think when we welcome Lenten times into our lives and accept them and even be grateful for them, then we have overcome greatly.
Reverend Moorhead, that's a nice message, one that your parishioners, I think, will enjoy. And the speaker series also is a way to encourage more people to visit the beautiful cathedral and honor a former bishop. Is that right?
Yes, we're honoring Frank Cervini, who was the sixth bishop of the Diocese of Florida. He is a fabulous man, was bishop for 18 years. And one of his legacies is he was just a tremendous preacher. So we're hosting this series as a way to honor him and thank him for his ministry.
Very nice. Now, Jan Caron, people just love your books. What do you think it is about the Mitford series that has just caught fire with so many readers?
I think I'm able to offer them a safe place to run. No sex, no cussing, no murder and mayhem. And people say, well, what is left? What do you write about? And so what I write about is just who we are as the American people right now. My books are set in the present time. They're not set in the past. And it just, I hope to console my readers and, if nothing more, make them laugh. And by the way, actually, there are 14 novels in the Mitford series.
14, all bestsellers too, right?
Well, yes, actually, ones in there. You know, that's wonderful because that means that, well, let's say that Frank Cervini has preached a sermon. He wants it to reach as many people as it can reach, because why are you up there? So why am I writing? I want it to reach as many people as possible, and I've been extremely pleased and totally astonished by the wide audience that this kind of work can attract.
Right. There is a big audience, obviously, for Jan's work. And so that's good news for you, Kate Moorhead, because I'm sure you'll have a packed house. But you want people to not only come out to see Jan Caron, but to just enjoy the beauty of the cathedral, which I've been there. It really is stunning.
It really is. I feel so blessed to be there.
For people that have never been before, tell me a little bit more about the history of the sanctuary and the cathedral there.
Well, the cathedral is one of the architectural jewels of Jacksonville. It is located on Billy Goat Hill, which many people don't realize is the highest point in Jacksonville.
Get
out of
here.
We have skyscrapers, you can't tell anymore.
Really?
But it's been a sacred site for many years, even before Jacksonville was inhabited. We believe we've actually found it was a Native American burial ground before the church was built. The original church was built in 1834, burned to the ground in the Great Civil War. Course. And then a second edition was burned to the ground in the Great Fire of 1901. So this church that stands today is the third St. John's Cathedral on that very site.
And was it built tremendous. 1870s, 1880s?
After the Civil War?
I'm sorry. The one that's there now was built after the fire. Pardon me.
So it was completed
early 20th century.
Yes, it was completed in 1906.
Wow. And it is beautiful. Now, tickets still available?
Absolutely.
How can people come out and see Jan Karam? And it's Saturday and Sunday.
Yes.
Two opportunities.
Absolutely. On Saturday, she will be talking with people and doing a Q&A. There'll be a tea and they can buy books that are signed. And then Sunday, she'll be preaching at two services at 9 and at 11 o'clock. So you can go to the website at jackscathedral.org to find out an RSVP. And we are expecting a big crowd.
I'm sure you will. Jan Karam, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I hope you enjoy your visit down here over St. Paddy's Day weekend, too.
Well, thanks a million, Melissa. It was wonderful being with you. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you, dear. Can't wait to see you.
That's Jan Karam, best-selling author of the Mitford series, Dean Kate Morehead of St. John's Cathedral. Again, just go to jackscathedral.org to come on out for this special event. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Later in the hour, Culpepper on March Madness. But up next, if you're looking to start or grow a small business, I'll tell you about some special help right here in town. That's after this.
With her three kids in the back of the minivan, Ellie Diaz is driving through a tunnel of flames.
Okay, I can do this.
But the next minute,
I would be like screaming, oh my God, we're gonna die. Like, please God, let us live.
Why weren't they warned? California's deadliest wildfires on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
WJCT offers a 24-hour classical music service dedicated to live classical music programming 24 hours a day. To find out more, visit us at wjct.org/hd.
Welcome back. Well, it's a great opportunity for anyone looking to get financing for their small business here on the First Coast. SCORE, that's the Service Corps of Retired Executives, is hosting a small business conference Saturday. It's called Meet the Funds Providers. That sounds enticing. SCORE is affiliated with the Small Business Administration, and they've got chapters all over the country to help people starting or growing their business. Here with more, we welcome two mentors and volunteers with the group, Derek Smith. He's here. Hey, Derek, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And also workshop coordinator Craig Linsky. Good to see you, too.
Good morning.
So SCORE sounds like a neat idea, retired executives using their wisdom gained over a career in business to turn around then and volunteer to help people just starting out. Pretty simple but powerful concept, it sounds like.
Pretty much. In fact, the Jacksonville chapter, Melissa, was one of the earlier chapters that was formed. And in the last year, we've served over 3,000 clients if you combine the free one-on-one counseling along with the workshops that are conducted.
Okay. And the workshops offer everything from writing a business plan, how to finance your business, maybe if you're looking to franchise, how to get started with that. Craig, you're the workshop coordinator for this big event Saturday. It's going to be at the Salem Center. What's going to be happening?
Well, we're having a series of presenters come in from various financial institutions. I think we have 9 different speakers that will be there. They will also be mixing with the attendees, so that you have a one-on-one question for one of the funds providers, you can get answer to your question. And we will also have several mentors from SCORE there. So if you want to set up a meeting to have one-on-one counseling with a SCORE mentor, you'll be able to do that as well.
This is the difficult hurdle for so many people to get over, getting capital. You're trying to help people get over that hump.
Yes. What we're trying to do is show them through these series of presenters, what is the process that goes on? What is it you're going to need to have when you go in to apply for financing? What are the people who are providing the financing looking for when they meet with you?
And people can be naive about this. It can be a maze. Derek Smith, how do you see these conferences generally working out? Are people different at the end of the day than when they were at the start of the day?
The feedback we've gotten from these workshops, Melissa, has been extremely positive. In many cases, people walk away with something they didn't know going in, which is often very good. And as Craig said, one of the things we also encourage is to then sign up for one of the free one-on-one counseling sessions at one of five centers that we have across the First Coast.
This is sort of a hidden gem, I think, for Jacksonville. People might not realize you're here, but there are five centers all over town now. It does stand for retired executives. SCORE stands for the Service Corps of Retired Executives. In your prior lives, where were you executives, both of you guys?
I worked in banking for my career. My last job was with Bank of America here in Jacksonville, doing small business customer analytics. So I became very familiar with the small business mentality, and really it's what encouraged me to get involved with SCORE in the first place.
How about you, Derek?
Most of my career was with CSX Transportation here in Jacksonville, and most of my time I spent in sales and marketing doing business development and market research and planning.
And what's it like for you now, taking all of your skills and insights and using them in a volunteer way? That must be kind of rewarding, because we tend to think about people volunteering in the nonprofit world. But you're volunteering to help people get a successful business going.
Yes, we tailor this specifically to for-profit businesses. So people who are just thinking about getting into it, we have workshops for them to say, if you want to get in, here's the mentality of a typical small business owner, and here are the things you need to be able to do in order to get into business for yourself. But we also work with companies that have been in business for several years, have a couple $1 million in sales. So we run the gamut, and the volunteers, we also have maybe half of them that are professionals like Derek and myself that have worked in the corporate world, but the other half are people who actually own small businesses, know the ins and outs, know the troubles and travails that the business owners have, and the people who want to come in for mentoring are free to choose either one of those types of people to be their mentor.
Well, spaces are filling up fast, the guys say. So if you want to take advantage of this free SCORE Small Business Financing Conference and meet the funds providers, register now. Go to jacksonville.score.org. This is coming up Saturday, March 17th, all day on Bonneville Road at the Salem Center in Jacksonville. That's right near JTB and Phillips Highway. Free event, but you got to register. Again, it's jacksonville.score.org. Derek Smith, Craig Linsky, thanks for stopping by. I'm sure you'll have a lot of takers for this one. Thanks for being here, guys.
Well, thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
A quick break, and in a moment, March Madness is here in college basketball. Can the Gators and Seminoles make a run? Cole Pepper stops by right after this with his thoughts about that and the rest of the week's sports here on First Coast Connect.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Serious injury cases are complex, and civil trial attorneys present the evidence juries need to see and hear. More at waynehogan.law.
Community hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
The quiet small town of Palatka was once a popular tourist destination, serving as a transportation hub for railroads and steamboat traffic on the St. Johns River. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit historic Palatka. We'll discuss the autobiography of Seminole War veteran F.C.M. Bogus and talk about the Miami Herald women's pages. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Used to be the initial public offering was the thing companies really wanted to do. Turns out, IPOs aren't all that.
Well, in the last 20 years, there are half as many companies that are public. There are far fewer public companies because there are other options.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Tech IPO Drought, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Ambassador Susan Rice believes America is a global force for good, but she questions whether the Trump administration agrees.
American foreign policy since World War II has been predicated on the notion that we don't live in a zero-sum world.
Susan Rice on America First, the Future of Diplomacy, and What It Takes to Be a Good Ambassador, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, Florida, Florida State, and Miami are all in the big dance.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Yes, March Madness is here in college basketball. Can the Gators and or the Seminoles make a run of it? Cole Pepper is rolling out his bracket for us this morning.
There it is.
There's my bracket right here.
I may be the only person who still does a bracket on paper, but it's just, this is sort of
people used to post it up on the wall, yeah.
Once upon, I'll tell a quick story here. I went to the University of Kansas, a huge college basketball tradition there, and we had in the house that I rented with my roommates, we had this dry erase board that every year, we would write in the brackets for it. And I remember at one point we're sitting there and there may be six or seven of us watching the games, you know, all hanging out as you do in college. And during a break, I look over and every single person in the room is staring up at that bracket, just kind of analyzing it. So there's something nice to having, you know, being able to have that bracket with you and kind of reference it when you get a chance to. Mm-hmm. So that's why I printed out. So I have it here.
Yes.
A couple of official
notes. Cole Pepper NCAA bracket.
So, and I have, and as you see, Melissa, and for those of you who are imagining you're seeing this, it's the bracket, but it's not filled out with all the teams. It just has this has all the teams and the games, but I've not filled it in to the end as of yet.
Yes.
But I'm going to tell you, Florida is the sixth seed in the East. They'll take on either St. Bonaventure or UCLA Thursday, probably after 10 o'clock. In the West, FSU is the 9 seed. They play Friday in Nashville because, of course, FSU being a Western team playing in Nashville. The way it works out now,
yeah, that's weird.
They'll play Missouri probably after 10 o'clock. And then the sixth seed in the South is Miami. They play in Dallas as well against Loyola Chicago, a 3:10 tip-off on Thursday. Here's how to win your office pool.
Ask you. That's my plan.
I don't know. I think I've only won like twice in the last 20 years, so I'm not sure.
I won't ask you anything. Kevin can help me with this.
There's always a 5-12 upset. Almost every single year, a 5 seed falls to a 12 seed. This year, those 5-12s are West Virginia against Murray State. West Virginia, very good pressing team. I don't think Murray State can handle them. The other 5-12s, Clemson, New Mexico State. I think that's a chance for an upset there.
Okay.
Sorry, Tiger fans. I think that the 5-12, South Dakota State and Ohio State, although South Dakota State had a terrific year, I don't think they've got enough to beat Ohio State. The other 5-12 is Kentucky against Davidson. So if I'm picking a 5-12 upset, I'm going with a Clemson, New Mexico State. Here's the other thing about this year in college basketball. The top 15 teams kind of churned their way through the top of the poll, in the middle of the poll. Nobody could really stay on top for very long. That's because there's a lot of balance. It's kind of a down year. There aren't dominant teams or dominant players in college basketball this season. So I think we're going to have fewer upsets into the Sweet 16 than we ever have before.
Interesting.
So if you're trying to make your decision, it's coming down to, well, which one of these teams do I think is going to make it? Go with the higher seed, the better seed.
Good advice.
When you get there.
You heard it here first.
And for the 37th consecutive season, I will be picking the Kansas Jayhawks to win the national championship.
Of course you will.
Because what else can I do? I think between Florida and Florida State, going to be tough for either one of those two to get past the second round. If they do, It would be a successful run of the tournament for both the Gators and the Seminoles, who have both had up and down seasons so far.
Okay, so there you have it. Get those brackets filled out. Meanwhile, Cole covered the Gate River Run Saturday, and who won?
Molly Huddle had the performance of the race. It doesn't happen every year, but you know they do this staggered start where the elite women start 6 minutes ahead of the elite men, and it's only happened a few times, but Molly Huddle was the first across the finish line and beat the defending champion Jordan Hesse by 50 seconds.
Yeah, I tried to estimate what I thought would get the equalizer and what I thought I could do, which was around 5:10 per mile, so I just tried to stick to that, and whoever was with me was with me, and if I broke away, I had to just keep pushing by myself. So fortunately, we had great weather, and it was kind of cool to have people cheering the whole way for the women. So yeah, it was fun.
It was an amazing performance. She basically led wire to wire. She's the American record holder in the 10,000 meters and also in the half marathon. She'll be one of the favorites to watch for the Boston Marathon coming up here in a few weeks. On the men's side, the defending champion Leonard Career won, second time in as many starts at the Gate. And hats off to the streakers.
38 of them?
38 streakers. Those are the runners who have competed in every single river run. Most of them
since
now.
Since the start, yeah. Since,
you know, again, 41 years, so most of these men and women are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. but they're still out there getting it done. They gave them new shirts this year, streaker shirts, so you could really identify them when they're out there. So hats off to everybody for doing that.
That's nice to see the streak remaining unbroken for some of them, several dozen of them. Okay, Tiger Woods looking good on his return to the course.
Yeah, finished a stroke off the win yesterday outside of Tampa. Tiger has not won on the PGA Tour since 2013, but he looks like a guy who is getting better and better each week, and I think he's going to be back to his winning ways. Won't be the Tiger of old, but he can win again on the PGA Tour, and he very nearly did it yesterday.
Last but not least, Cole says, watch the Jaguars free agency period beginning today.
Well, they can start negotiating with players today. And then starting Wednesday, they can start signing players. I think the Jaguars are going to add on the offensive line somebody in the passing game, either a receiver or a tight end who can help as far as that's concerned. Maybe a linebacker, maybe depth at cornerback. Right now, it looks like the Jaguars are likely to let Allen Robinson search elsewhere. I still think there's a chance that the wide receiver could come back and sign a deal. He wants to see what his market value is, and the Jaguars aren't willing to pay him what he thinks his market value is right now. Marquise Lee probably coming back. Cornerback Aaron Colvin and Paul Posluszny, a couple of key guys on the defense, could also be looking for new employment in the National Football League. But it's an exciting time. Last year, they did so much in terms of free agency, bringing in Calais Campbell and A.J. Boye and Barry Church. I don't think they'll be quite as active this year, but they are going to make some moves to try to strengthen the team heading to next
Never
season.
Never a shortage of sports. Every Monday, Cole is here to bring us up to date. As always, great to see you. Thanks for being here, my friend.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A's up next with a look at regulations on banks that are too big to fail and why they could change. We'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thanks for listening. And catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.